Hey guys, welcome back to Accelerated Real Estate Investor with Josh Cantwell. Today I have a special treat. I am interviewing a relatively new friend of mine. His name is Faris Moussa. I was actually introduced to Faris through my good friend, Kenny Wolf. Kenny is a fellow apartment investor. He lives down in the Houston area where Faris is also located. Faris is the CEO and founder of a company called Disrupt Equity. And Faris is, man, a mover and a shaker in the multifamily and apartment space. And I was able to get connected to Faris through Kenny. So Kenny, thanks for the introduction. Faris is an entrepreneur at heart with a tech background, graduated from the University of Texas, worked at Microsoft, quit Microsoft to focus on real estate, which is when he found his passion for real estate. Quickly built his portfolio of rentals with 9 closings in his first 12 months. And after seeing the results of his rental properties, Faris decided to scale up into apartment complexes, where he started and founded Disrupt Equity. Some of you guys are familiar with the Multifamily Investor Network conferences that are co-sponsored by Disrupt Equity and Kenny Wolf at Wolf Investments. If you've attended one of those conferences, those guys are amazing, as you know. Disrupt Equity focuses on multifamily acquisition and investments for investors, and helps leverage his strengths in tech to better identify qualified and quality investments for investors. They now span multiple markets, primarily down in the South, including Dallas, Oklahoma, Houston, Alabama, Atlanta. And just in the last 4 months, they've actually liquidated and sold 3 massive complexes for multi-million dollar profits. So this is a really fun and dynamic interview with Faris Moussa from Disrupt Equity. Here we go.
Welcome to the Accelerated Investor Podcast with Josh Cantwell. If you're looking to retire early with forever passive income, you're in the right place. This podcast is the go-to destination for real estate investors, both active and passive, and multifamily apartment investors, both new, intermediate, and advanced. Now, sit back, listen, learn, and accelerate your business, your life, and your investing with the Accelerated Investor Podcast.
So, hey, Faris, listen, I'm so excited to have you on the show today. Thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. So I know we talked a little bit off camera, kind of getting going, but I'm always most interested to hear what's going on from entrepreneurs and people that I have on the show. What's going on in their market? What's going on in their business right now? Like challenges that they're experiencing or deals that they're finding. So what's something that you're working on today that kind of gets you going?
Yeah. So something, you know, today or really this month, right, we've been using, you know, kind of the market's really hot, right? So that means we're struggling to find new deals, but also an opportunity to sell. So really we're kind of going through our portfolio and just, you know, capitalizing on some of those gains. And so looking through, we're selling, probably have 5 deals that we're selling this year. And the other side of that is really beefing up operations, right? I do think, you know, the next decade is the one of the operator. And so kind of we have Disrupt Management, which is our management side of the business. And really that business is really starting to grow and scale and really doubling down to just kind of build it out the way that I want it to be built. So that's been kind of the big focus for us, I'd say. So it's been busy, fun. And like I tell people, management is the worst business in the world, but it's a necessary evil.
Right. So Faris, I'm interested to hear your take. What I've seen in the market for the past about month or so, and I'm predicting that the last 7 months of the year, there's a historical number of trades that take place. Because of the threat of the Biden tax increases, the threat of the 1031 exchange changes, the threat of increased capital gains, you're having owners that didn't sell last year because of COVID, and you have owners that might not have sold for 5 years from now, that all of a sudden, because the threat of changes in the tax policy, that they're looking at possibly selling this year. And I'm talking to a lot of brokers that are talking about the certainty of closing because these guys are scared that they might lose their basis, they might lose their 1031 exchange opportunity next year. They're selling this year. So I'm predicting the next 7 months is a historical number of trades are happening in the multifamily space. So you said things are busy. What's your take
on how busy you are. What's your take on what's going to happen over the next 6 or 7 months?
Yeah, so I agree with your point, but I think I have a different reason for it. Right. So I agree. Things are hot. I mean, we track and analyze and underwrite probably more deals than anybody I know. Like I said, my background is software. Came from Microsoft, came from that world. I'm very big on building systems, processes, and scaling something out, right? And building a team behind it. And we've seen a huge influx of deals come through, right? And, you know, we've been close on a lot of deals and we're getting beat out by people that are doing things like releasing $500,000 hard day one to seller directly. Like we literally lost a deal early this week because of that. Right. Wow. We were number two. We were a significant amount hard money day one, but this, you know, we weren't releasing a sale. Things like that. And so I think, you know, the threat of 1031, the Biden, all of that stuff, while that's a fear, I don't know. I'm not as concerned about that coming to fruition. For me, it's more about pent up demand and a ton of money that made itself into the market and lower interest rates, right? Mm-hmm. Because you just have, you know, ultimately I'm a big believer the money is going to find its way to trickle itself up and look for investments back down. I think that's just the reality of the world that we're in. And with low interest rates, right, two interesting things happen. Real estate gets more attractive because you can lock in really low rates for long term. But also more importantly, right, everything else looks terrible as an investment, right? Savings, CDs, all of that is, I mean, those are the make pennies. And so while a deal that, you know, let's say real estate, let's say you buy it at a 3.5 cap, that's really, really low, right? Mm-hmm. We're not in a 3.5 cap market yet, but let's say we get there. Well, you buy something at 3.5 cap leverage, or maybe at a 6 cap, right? Guess what? 6% is significantly, it's a magnitude more than the 0.6% CD that you may buy, right?
Right.
That's just the reality. So 10x more return by still overpaying for real estate. And so I think, you know, ultimately real estate is very attractive and all of that money is starting to look into real estate. And maybe, the, you know, the icing on the cake is, you know, we're in multifamily. That's what we do A to Z, right? That's we buy multifamily, we operate multifamily, we sell multifamily, we manage multifamily. Multifamily kind of proved itself to be the darling child of COVID because
no doubt.
It's just resilient, right? People have to eat, sleep. Sorry, people have to eat, drink, and then third is sleep, and the government's going to support that, right? Whether you know you agree with it or not, that's the reality. And so, you know, I think it's just you're going to see more and more money, and there's just a lot of pent up demand, and we're just seeing each month I'm seeing more cap rate compression than I saw before. So
right,
that's kind of my philosophy. I know, you know, the 1031. Maybe there are people that's also doing it for that reason. But I just think it's just the outlook looks strong, right?
Yeah, the outlook does look strong. And there is pent-up demand. There is a lot of capital in the system. And the threat of the 1031 exchange. Like I've looked at 2,000 units in the last 2 weeks, physically walked them and underwrote them. And every single situation, when I talk to the broker, they're like, the guy wasn't going to sell for 3 to 5 years, but now he wants to sell this year because he needs to cash out. So you add that on top of everything you just mentioned. It's amazing. So it depends on what you can find, right? Is it a down the fairway type of deal where you can cash flow it from day one? It's a 5 to 7 year hold, selling, you know, 7 to 10 years. Is it a big value add play? Well, we're seeing all those kind of things kind of happen now. And yeah, I think the best operators that can operate and execute on their business plan are going to win. And also, I do think that people are going to overpay. There are people that are going to make offers on deals that are going to realize, wow, like this is a cash flow deal, but there's a lot of pent up CapEx that needs to be done that they didn't account for. I do see people making some mistakes for sure because they're just trying to beat out other operators to a deal instead of underwriting it properly and baking in the money for cap. I'm okay if I lose deals. I just lost a deal last week that we full price offer. Other guy made a full price offer. We were willing to put up $200,000 hard day one and we still lost it, right?
No, things are competitive, like I said, and we're looking, and maybe the other thing I'm going to add too, and I don't know if this is kind of what you're saying, Josh, is we're starting, the caps between C, B, and A have gotten so narrow that I think it's actually short-sighted for people that chase just C value add, right? We are looking at a lot more Bs and As because ultimately, if I can pay another five a door, 10 a door more and buy something that is 30 years newer, guess what? That's probably the right play, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just caps have all compressed and then they've also gotten narrower between them. And so we're looking at nicer, bigger deals, and ultimately, you know, becomes a slog fest against institution, right? Because those guys are doing things like releasing 500,000 hard day one to seller, right? I mean, I'm still a little disappointed about that one, right?
Right, but sure.
It's just you're seeing it's ultra competitive, but again, the outlook looks good as well.
Yeah,
I'm a big, you know, and it's to your point. You got to underwrite it correctly and ultimately project the right projections to investors, right? That's maybe what it is. I like to tell people, if I tell investors I'm going to give them an 8 and I give them a 7, they're disappointed. If I tell them I can give them a 7 and I give them a 7, they're happy.
Right.
And so, you know, returns have gotten watered down. People have to get their investors to realize that and be okay with that, right? But I just see some people that, there's a joke that I have. There's someone that we know, we bought an A class, B class, and a C class. All three of them somehow pencil in to be the exact same IRR. Makes no sense.
Right.
You know, right. Stick to your underwriting, right? And just go into a deal just knowing and expecting the right thing and having your investors to expect the right thing too.
So. Yeah. What are your thoughts, Ferris, on this possible inflation, right? We know that owning hard assets like real estate, like multifamily, also do good in an inflationary environment. Mm-hmm. But what are some things that maybe you guys are looking at or you're telling some of your investors to kind of look out for? Because there is so much money in the system and prices, asset prices are going up for everything. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, real estate, lumber, steel, it's all going up. We expect there to be possibly more inflation down the road. How is that impacting your underwriting now? And what are you looking at? What kind of risks are there?
Yeah, I do think we're going to start to see inflation, especially, you know, I mean, we're in Texas and Georgia. Right. And it's funny, we're based here in Houston. That's where our headquarters are. And we've kind of ignored Houston for a while. Right. But I think inflation's here. And I think that we're going to see a lot more of that here coming up. And so I think, you know, it's going to lead to rent growth. Right. That's ultimately why I like inflation. It's going to give me rent growth. So the deals that we're, you know, modeling 2-3% escalators, maybe they get 4%. Right. And that just makes the deal sweeter. And so I do think we'll see inflation. Right. The question is when. And ultimately, if we don't see inflation, that's okay too, right? Because we're not betting on it, right? But right. I do think we'll get it, so.
Yeah, I also think it's not something that we can really predict. It's something that we find out in the past.
Yeah, just, you know, and maybe there's deflation, right? Maybe we're wrong. But I think just, again, the amount of money that got pumped into the economy, right? I just think naturally you will start to see some of that inflation.
Yeah, for sure.
And the question is, are you going to see more of it in the C's or the A's, right? Because, you know, you have companies like the richest person in the world now is the Arnold guy that owns all of those luxury
Louis Vuitton
brands, yeah. Right? Out of France. Well, that speaks for itself, right? So you're seeing that the, you know, the high income earners can continue to spend, right? And so they can also pay higher rents. And so now will that trickle, you know, are we going to see that in the middle class or are we going to see that in the lower class? TBD.
Are you ready to automate and explode your real estate investing? We're searching for extremely motivated individuals who are sick and tired of wasting time and want to finally see real results from their real estate investing business. We're searching for investors looking to get to the next level and become a bigger, better version of themselves while being a more successful real estate investing entrepreneur. Apply for mentoring and coaching at joshcantwellcoaching.com/podcast. That's joshcantwellcoaching.com/podcast.
Yeah, TBD for sure. Yeah. So Ferris, tell me about your favorite structure. You've done lots and lots and lots of multifamily deals. You're raising lots of capital. Again, Texas, Georgia, we're in the same markets too. I own about 700 units in Houston. We own almost 2,000 units outside of Atlanta, Albany, Macon, those kind of markets. But there's different structures for every deal. There's a deal that really is a true value add that needs a heavy CapEx. And then there's deals that are more like I can buy them, I can cash flow them from day one. What's your favorite? Maybe you don't have a favorite. Maybe you have a couple different types of structures. Tell us about that.
That's a good question. So we've done the deep value add. We've done the deal that you take from 80% on paper, we took it down to 40% and then brought it back up to 95%, sold it. We've done the 30 down units, the 50 down units. We've also done the coupon clippers.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you know, kind of, you do the other ones because, you know, you home run those for investors, right? Because to me, your best referral is an investor, right? Mm-hmm. The best type of investors, ones that are referred. And, you know, you do that, you build your brand, you build your reputation, but also the coupon clippers take 10 times less work, right? Mm-hmm. So again, it goes back to what I said earlier. If I have investors that trust me confidently and, you know, they're okay with whatever return I project and I hit it, everybody's happy. And so for me, it's like, well, I can do a lot less headache, a lot less risk, right? And do a deal that's maybe going to get 1% less versus doing a lot more work, a lot more headache, a lot more risk and getting 1% more.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, I like more... As I've grown, you know, like, and that's not to say I won't do the deep value add, right? But it's got to be priced right. There's got to be more meat on the bone, right? That's maybe the part of the mistake is that those deep value adds, we structure them the same as the coupon clippers, right? Mm-hmm. And those, like I said, they're 10 times more work. So for us and the team, you know, to get them all excited, we need to get a bigger kind of split on that one. And so ultimately, we're starting to see the value of location. Right. And disrupt management, our management side of the business, right, does third party business. And one of the most insightful things for me, because, you know, that business is growing significantly and it's helping me see which deals are really easy and which deals aren't. Mm-hmm. Right. And really goes back to location. You start to really see the value of location, and not just, okay, is it in a good area? It's, hey, is it on the intersection that matters or not, right? And I'm starting to see, you know, the value of, you know, I used to think like we have a property in San Antonio right off the highway. You know, 200,000 cars pass by that every day, right? Significant yeah. amount. That's cool and all, but actually I'm starting to see really how valuable and how nice suburban deals are, right? And so, you know, I'm starting to learn what works more easily, what things don't. And it just kind of on the acquisition side, it knows which, it tells me which deals are worth stepping up on.
Sure.
Versus which deals like, hey, the meat needs to all be there, right? There's not going to be much upside. If it performs, great. But these other deals, I know there's going to be upside, right? There's one deal that we third-party managed, you know, suburban, and we're getting 7% lease renewals, which is significant, right?
Yeah, I mean, sure.
People are modeling 2.5% on, you know, just rent growth. We're getting 7.5% on renewals. And so things like that.
Nice. Love it. So interesting that you do your own deals, raise your own capital, manage your own stuff, and manage for others, right? I've heard a lot of people say, like, I never would want to manage something for someone else. So what's your philosophy around why manage your own and for others?
No, that's a great question. So, you know, we started disrupt management out of necessity, right? There is all these management companies I've seen who are all built in the 90s. Nobody's kind of paused to think about like, hey, we're like 20 years later, like let's rethink this business a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And my background is software. So we created disrupt management out of necessity just from, we've had 7 different management companies, right? And just seeing the good, the bad, the ugly, right? And that's not to say they're all terrible, but most of them are. That's the truth of it.
Yeah, sure.
And so we really built kind of an owner-operator one initially for our deals, but really to roll out some of the things that I've been seeing in tech and really how do we build the system that it's not just dependent on that supervisor, but there is some sort of corporate looking over their shoulder. Because what I've seen is if you have a good supervisor, things go well. If you have a terrible supervisor, things quickly deteriorate.
Oh, yeah.
And so as a company, how do we build a system that we can kind of have eyes on everything? And, you know, from corporate over the supervisor to even over the on-site staff, right? And getting that accountability, that visibility, that honesty. And so we did that for ourselves. Proof is in the pudding. You know, we kind of guinea pigged on ourselves. That went well. And then we started doing third party. And like I said, management's a terrible business, mm-hmm. right? Especially third party, because you're kind of stuck between tenants that have issues and owners that are complaining because they maybe underwrote their deals too tightly and their margins aren't there, right? And
they're God, we love, they're love middle management, that, right? No.
And they're bringing you deals that were mismanaged on top of that, right? So
sure.
you have to kind of clean up, you know. So we have someone that runs that, Jackie. She's the president of the management company. She likes to say basically they were burned by their ex-girlfriend and now they're coming to you and they're nervous, right?
Yeah.
And so you're in this weird spot and nobody's happy kind of thing, right? And so there's a very candid, like, look, here's the reality of it, right? And I have to almost retrain our team, like, hey, with owners, like, don't sweep stuff under the rug. Give them the full, cold, hard reality of their how dire their situation might be if it came for third party, you know, another company, and what it's going to take, right? But then ultimately perform on what we say we're going to do and do it. That's my biggest thing. And so back to your question, why do we do it? It's not a profit center, right?
Yeah.
We literally break even on management. That's all I care about. But it's goes to giving us scale.
Data.
Right? I have 10,000 units that we either own and operate in the market. I can do some smart things, right? If I have, now I'm going to give you an example. The management company we use in Atlanta, I'm not going to mention names, you know, the third party side, they have a significant presence in Atlanta, but they treat each deal as an independent deal, right? Versus if I have 10,000 units that I manage in one city, I'm going to go to the landscaper and say, hey, I need you not to bid this property. I need you to bid these 10, 20, 30, 40, 50
properties. Yeah, you got to use your leverage, right? Yeah.
And, you know, even going as far as say, okay, you know, we have 10,000 units. Of that 10,000, we're going to upgrade 2,000 units this year, right? Guess what? I'm going to go buy a container of faucets from China,
yeah.
right? Bring it here and go to my owners. And again, it's all about transparency, right? It's okay to make money if you're transparent about it and the owner agrees. So go to the owner and say, look, today we're buying faucets for you from Home Depot for $10. I'm going to buy a container from, you know, from China for $5. I'm going to sell it to you for $7. You're actually saving $3. It's a win-win-win for everybody.
Right.
And, you know, it helps our properties. It helps their properties. And everything grows. And so it's really, that's the thing. It's about having that scale and being able to throw that weight behind anything. And really, you know, all of these properties combined together is a lot more powerful than one independent property.
Yeah. And the amount of data that you're seeing.
It helps us because our main business is buying and selling and operating deals. It's not property management.
Sure.
Right. And so, but it really helps us to perform on that part of the business.
Has that helped you get insight into deals that are hurting and get you in a situation to do some acquisitions?
Not yet-ish. So, and what I mean is it helped me give me the insight on deals that are easy versus deals that are hard that I was telling you about. So it helps me kind of put my acquisition hat back on, helps me really think about deals differently, right? And even deals like it helps me whenever I look at a deal like that's distressed from somebody else, helps me know like, hey, there's real operational juice here. Mm-hmm. Right. And even whenever you go to the lender, right, no lender likes to hear that you're going to operate it better than the other guy. Right. It's a hard sell. But if you have a management company and you can show the data, they actually do buy that story. And so it helps me know which deals actually there are operational challenges that we could cure. And then I think as we grow, as more lenders know us, right, we will start to get that kind of business, right, where they maybe took the deal back from the owner, right? They need someone to manage it, service it, and we'll get that business over the long run.
Sure.
So that's kind of, again, it's really, I look at the, you know, me and my partner, everything we do is a 10-year horizon. And so that's really management to date. Like, we have not gotten a deal that we bought because we were managing it, right? We have not gotten that yet. But again, servicing, all of this other stuff you start to grow into. And it's about having that track record, showing the things that we've done on the management side. So.
Yeah, I definitely think that there's operators who are getting bailed out right now who bought a deal 4 years ago or 2 years ago on a bridge loan. They're way over on their CapEx expense and they need to sell or they need to refi. Their plan was to refi and hold, but now they can't refi because they're over. But because property values have gone up, they're being saved. They can just unload and sell it.
We were this close to buying a $50 million two-pack because of that same reason.
Yeah.
Their bridge, they had way done too much CapEx and they couldn't refi because the numbers didn't support it.
Yep. And they can't return investor equity and they went over on the refi. So then they got to sell and they're fortunate. But if the market were to turn in any way, if there's any weakness, which I don't really see in this market, but not with multifamily, but if there was, that's where the deals are start to be had, where banks are like, well, we're going to call this note due, balloon it. Oh, by the way, we can't refi it. Oh, by the way, like, can't really sell it for what we want. The owner's hanging on to it because he's got money, time, everything, team invested in it. All of a sudden becomes some sort of fire sale, distress sale. I don't see that happening anytime soon. I mean, if the market changes in some way, maybe it's 3 to 5 years out. We'll see. But I do think, like you said at the very beginning of this interview, the next 10 years is going to be all about operators and all about operations, because there's also going to be consolidation. There's going to be more operators getting larger, acquiring more deals, more properties. And the smaller guy that wants to play in this space is going to have to be really dynamic and really good at finding deals and operating, because the big boys have the money to play with, to operate and make mistakes, but still have the money to make up for it and the size and the sheer scale. The smaller guys, if they want to play, you can't. It's not, the days of just, I found a good deal and I'm going to outsource everything are over. Yes. Those are long gone.
And to add to that too, margins are getting tighter, right? With the ephemeral, you know, just the amount of information that's out there, right? There is more syndicators today than there were a year ago than there were 2 years ago. Right?
Yeah,
that's just
ever.
The reality of it. And, you know, unfortunately, most people that syndicate, the margins are getting tighter and tighter, right? Or they're misunderwriting the deals. And so, you know, that's good and bad, right? But that means people are paying up further and further for deals. And, you know, some of those people will get burned, right?
Yeah,
but,
no doubt.
And so kind of it'd be interesting to see what happens there. But yeah, I do think there's going to be some consolidation, even on the management side. Like, you know, kind of that's really the, you know, the only way we'll make money from management is if we get it big enough and sell the whole thing, right?
Sure, yeah.
And I just think there's not enough consolidation in this industry across the board. And it'll be interesting to see what happens there, right? And so I'm actually interested in syndicating to go acquire other syndicators, right?
Really, yeah. Oh, there you go.
Know, do that consolidation, right? If you do the right kind of strategy, the right kind of play with the right backbone.
So. Yeah, buy the whole portfolio and then just add it on top. Yeah, that's instead of buying a 200 unit, you know, buy 2,000 units or 5,000 units at a time. Fantastic stuff. So what risks do you see in the market coming up? I mean, we talked about inflation, but that can actually work to our advantage. One of the things I see, like we already talked about, is this idea of refi risk. A lot of guys planning on these lower interest rates, not booking in possible increase in interest rates to keep up with inflation, cap rate expansion, those kind of things. Operator risk. What are some risks that our audience should be aware of? Some things that you guys are penciling for?
Good question. I mean, I think it's all operational risk, right? That's the biggest thing. Just again, people go in thinking they're going to get these $200 rent pops and their whole business plan is based on that and they're not getting that, right? Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff. While yes, we'll get rent depreciation, some of these other things that will help it along the way. I just see too much of that. The other thing too is there's a lot more, everybody's looking at floaters, right? And we've done it. We've done the agency, we've done fix, we've done floaters, we've done bridge, we've done it all. And floaters are really powerful. Actually, I love floaters, but it just, you have to look at it the right lens, right? And so we did a deal recently where we did a Freddie floater. And actually, I'm so stoked about this deal because on that deal, right, the fixed would have been about a 3.4 interest rate. The floater was about 2.8 currently.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're doing a floating interest rate, you have to buy something what's called a cap, right? Mm-hmm. It's basically insurance that the lender requires to mitigate the upside. And typically, you know, on a Freddie deal, I think it's 2.25 cap. So if you do the math, right, if we're 2.8, add in 2.25, right, that gets you to about 5, right, as your max exposure.
Sure.
And, you know, what we did actually is, you know, they require a 3-year cap. What we did is we actually paid up a little bit more. We got a 5-year cap and we bought down the upside risk. Right? So it's actually a tight cap. So our max exposure is, instead of 2.8, the most we can ever get to is 4. And that's the worst case risk. And so again, we bought down that. And if you do the math, right, we paid $210,000 for that cap. Instead of the cap that the lender required was, I think, about $50,000. So we paid $150,000 premium, but just on that lower interest rate alone, we're going to make that back pretty much in the year and a half.
Right.
And so we completely took out the risk. It gives us a long runway. And on top of that, we can sell the deal, you know, in a year if we want to. Right. So it's really, it's structuring, right? I think not like too many people still have that agency. And tell me how I know, right? We have 5 deals we're probably going to sell the rest of the year. And 3 of the 5, we're going to pay $2.5 million prepay penalties.
Yeah, sure.
Right? There's so much meat on the bone.
Right.
And, you know, that would have been nice money to keep, right? And so you kind of learn about how do you structure the deals going in to really look at that backside. I think too many people only focus on the now and the buy. People don't think about how do I go to that back end of it.
Yeah, so. I agree. So listen, tell me a little bit more about how you guys get this business started. You have a massive amount of success, but what were some early challenges that you guys faced?
Oh man, we faced challenges along the every, not early, late, middle. I mean, yeah. Trust me,
yesterday.
You know, I used to have no gray hair, right? I get in this business. My partner Ben has no hair, right?
Yeah.
Way we got started. I mean, also, I'm a big believer in reading a lot of books, listening to a lot of podcasts such as this, and getting educated, right? That's mm-hmm. a big part of the thing. Then hop in and don't take any risks that are going to kill you, right? You take risks, but then you're being smart risks. And so that's really kind of the name of the game. My first purchase was a fourplex that I bought that's literally about a mile away from our office right here, right? Coincidentally. And I remember buying that thing. I was still in Seattle at the time. I had just left Microsoft. And, you know, I never bought any real estate in my life, not even a house. So I bought that, kind of saw the value of having 4, and then bought a bunch of houses, then realized it doesn't scale, shifted into apartments, and kind of the rest is history.
Yeah.
And, you know, you face challenges along the way, right? And really the biggest challenge we always faced was management, third-party management. There is just no accountability. It's, you know, and they will kill you. Mm-hmm. And so luckily we fixed that one by starting an entire management company that's grown significantly since then. And I think that's what probably the biggest challenge most people will face once you get through the buy is going to be your property management company.
Yeah,
there's no one that I know besides hopefully our clients that say they love their property management company, right?
Yeah.
That's just the reality. And so that's a big challenge. Other challenges we face that we've seen it all from lending drama, right? We have a deal that we literally awarded the LOI this past Monday or Tuesday, right, to the next buyer. So we're selling the deal. That deal was so difficult to close right at the time. We had some lending issues where Freddie completely disappeared and we had to jump ship, pay up, increase the price because we already ran out of extensions and then go to a Fannie. And that's a deal that essentially we paid 50 a door. We're selling for 95 right now.
Nice.
Right? So, but again, it was a headache at the time. And I literally remember at the time trying to think through, who do I know that can give us $4 million in the next 2 days just to buy the thing cash and then we deal with the loan?
Right.
Luckily, we're able to afford it. But I was literally like, that was the exercise that I was going through in my head and trying to figure out how do I come up with $4 million? Just because, I mean, we knew it was a home run deal, right? And so you face challenges along the way. And I tell people challenges are going to happen. No business is perfect, right? And, you know, from, like I said, buying the deal to loans, to operating, to even staff, right? As we've grown, you know, trying to maintain a culture, but as you get bigger, it's harder to maintain the culture. And how do you do both, right?
Sure.
But it's about constantly making conscious steps towards solving them and also just making sure you don't make the mistakes that will kill you.
Right.
Mistakes happen, right? I'm going to run a marathon. I'm going to trip along the way. I might stumble. I might do this other stuff. But make sure, you know, you don't fall off a cliff. Right. And so it's that kind of mentality and really just being resilient. So
I think that, you know, I think Ray Dalio is the author of the book Principles and talks about just can't make the mistake that completely knocks you out of the game. Right.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about. And
exactly. So mistakes happen. It'll always happen, you know, but it's just about being and learning from them. That's my big thing. It's mistakes happen. And I get that all. I stress that to the team. I'm like, look, is the first time it happens? Great. Don't be mad. Like people, they're scared to come say, oh, I screwed up. Hey, that happens. I don't get mad about that. I get mad if it's the second time we screw up and it's the same mistake, right?
Right. Right.
So
quick question about staffing, right? Because the business of multifamily investing is really about people making the right decisions, management, acquisitions, raising capital, banking relationships. In order to build a big shop like you guys have, you have to be fanatical about hiring, nurturing, keeping, training the best people. I think a lot of entrepreneurs, including myself, where we could fall the fastest is by building, and not backfilling with good people to actually run the business. So thoughts on hiring, staffing, that kind of stuff.
Great question. So that's funny because before this, I had a software company, right? My background is software and I had done that. And I got spoiled there because you're hiring high caliber, high paid
people. Yeah, the world's best people.
People that want to stay. And so then disrupt equity, right? We also kind of got spoiled, right? We have that, you know, that type of people. What I've learned with management, though, is it's a lot of people, right? We're, you know, 120 people there. It's a lot of people, but high turnover business on top of that. And you have to be constantly building your bench and culture. Whereas disrupt equity, it's almost a joke in the office where like the people want to be on the equity side, the grass is greener there.
Yeah.
Luckily, I've been kind of fixing the management side. But to your point, I've learned for key roles, don't just hire to hire. And we've made this mistake. Again, going back to mistakes, we've made the mistake where, you know, we're growing so fast, we just needed to put somebody in and keep going. But ultimately, the person ends up paying the price is you in the long run.
No doubt.
It's almost, and I've learned it's better to not hire than hire someone just for the sake of hiring. Because again, I spend more time mopping up from mishires than I do from just if I would have done it myself. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, and every time me and my partner, Ben, we, you know, if we're here on a weekend working on something, it's because we screwed up and we hired someone who shouldn't and we're trying to fix it, right? Yeah, that's the joke that we have, unfortunately, right? But hiring is critical and, you know, really tap into your network, but, you know, vet the person. And people are really polished, but that's very different than work ethic, right? And I expect people to have a healthy work-life balance. It's not about working 100 hours a week, right? But more about taking the initiative. I tell people it's better to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission, mm-hmm. right? I don't want to have to spoon feed someone everything. I want them to take a chance, go make a mistake. That's all great. I'm supportive of that. Just don't make the same mistake and, you know, help us move the needle, right? If I have to give you every thought, every idea, that's not adding much value to me. I could have hired a secretary for lack of a better word, right?
Yeah. Sure.
And so it's really hiring is critical. And as you grow, it's even more critical because if you bring on the right people, they start to hire other people, right? And making sure they know what you look for and how to do that. Because again, I tell people, if you're doing people that report to your job, that means you're not doing your job.
Yeah.
Right. So you need to bring on people that are asking to do their job and train them to do it. Right. But let them do their job. So you're not doing their job, because then it becomes just all the way up down where everybody's doing the next person's job. Well, someone is not doing their role.
Yeah.
And so hiring is so critical, especially on the management side. And having a bench is the other thing. Have other backups. Right. Just so you can kind of really figure out the good, the bad, the ugly. And that's the power of like mastermind, talking to other guys and learning and kind of how are they doing. Like right now, my biggest challenge on the management side is bringing in a really, really highly qualified controller. So if you know a highly qualified controller, let us know. Right. Not as a senior company. I want someone that is just going to go build that accounting empire. Right. That's a hard challenge. I've been trolling LinkedIn, trying to, you know, tapping into the network, trying to find that right person. And so, yeah, it's key. It's, you know, it's so core. And even, you know, even just on acquisition side, right. Someone that can be personable with the brokers, right. We spend too much of our time working with brokers, and I love that part of the business. Right. But again, it's like, well, I got to go do this and this and this. And so I need to find the right person that can hand off those relationships, be personable, be professional, and, you know, kind of rock and roll. And
yeah, so, love it.
Real estate, I like to say it's a people's business. What I love about real estate, it's a people's numbers and process business. And the people is so critical. It's all about who you know and who knows you.
In my newest real estate investing book, The Flip System, you'll learn the proven secrets and strategies that I've used to be a successful real estate investor. You'll also hear the story of my journey from quitting my job to doing over 2,000 units of apartments. The Flip System is now available for a limited time, and you can grab your free copy at getflipsystem.com/podcast. You'll learn the same proven principles and secrets and investing strategies that I used to quit my job and pursue a life of financial freedom. In this book, I'm sharing exactly how I was able to personally close over 750 profitable real estate deals, make over 400 private lender loans, raise over $30 million, and acquire over 2,000 units of cash flowing apartments. Get my newest book now for free at getflipsystem.com/podcast. That's getflipsystem.com/podcast.
Love it. Love it. Ferris, let's do this. Let's finish with our final five quick questions, 10 to 30 second answers. Ready?
All right.
Question number one, what's your favorite way to find deals?
Favorite way to find deals is really just knowing the brokers really, really well. And just, and I call them constantly. I'm like, and I don't ask them, but hey, don't tell me what deals you have right now. Tell me which deals are blowing up.
Yeah.
Right. That's really, I bring that up all the time, because if you call them on the right day at the right time, they're like, oh, actually this thing is happening. There's already a price that the seller's going to go, you know, everybody knows, you know where you need to be. right? Versus being the stalking horse to push everybody else up. And so that's my favorite way to kind of buy a deal. There's one deal that I like to joke about that I got it because I got the broker a bottle of barbecue sauce, right? Long story short, the broker, you know, he's not in Texas. He loves this one place in Texas. And coincidentally, I had lunch with a broker in his state and then I came back and that week, my partner Ben and I happened to be at that place for a meetup or something. And I literally bought two bottles and I had Shanna from our team like, here, can you mail this off to him? And fast forward 2 weeks later, he called me. He's like, hey, I got a deal for you. Here's the price. You know, we're going to three groups and we bought that deal and that deal's done phenomenal.
The barbecue sauce deal. Love it. Question number two, Ferris, what's your favorite way to find investors, limited partners, joint venture dollars and kind of fill up your capital stack?
Absolutely. My favorite way is referrals. Like, and also I tell people it's about performing, guys. Like, you know, people really want to try to squeeze juice from a turnip and try to make a quick buck from one deal. I tell people we make money off 100 deals, not off one deal. Mm-hmm. If I have to give back GP on a deal because it's not working well enough to make my investors happy, that's what I'm going to do, right? But the best is the referrals because they're already trusted. There's not this mystique of like, because again, most people don't wire $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 chunks of money for anything besides a house they're buying.
Yes.
So it's all foreign to most retail investors, right? Now we're growing and you know into more of the private equity institutional space, but again, there's some problems there. So I like to have different pools of equity, but
oh, yeah.
My favorite is referrals. Even in the private equity side, it's someone that I know that's already done business with those people and we got referred to them. That's a warm lead, right? That's the best kind of lead.
Yeah, it doesn't take as long to nurture, probably even get better terms because of the relationship and the referral. Oh,
absolutely, right?
Ferris, next question. What's your favorite book or favorite piece of advice that you've ever been given?
My favorite book is The E-Myth Revisited.
There you right? go. Love it.
You know, that's a fantastic book. If people haven't read it, you should. It really helps people start to dissect business. People are really infatuated with the concept of entrepreneurialism, right? Because people only see the surface. They see what me and you right here, right? They don't see all the, you know, all the long days and, you know, all of the darker hair you used to have and the grind that it takes, right? But then also the processes that it takes to really build something that can grow and scale. And so I love that book. I think, and I should probably go listen to it and read it again. I haven't read it in a few years, but it really kind of helps you think about your business at different points of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Ferris, what's your favorite place to think? How do you get away from your business to strategize, think, and kind of decompress?
Yeah, that's a good question, right? I just love business, right? Like for me, it's not, you know, money is great, all that. To me, it's fun to build a business and grow and have an impact. That's really what it is for me. And so I enjoy working on the business. Like if I'm working, me just sitting down for 5 hours doing nothing but just kind of catching up on emails, like that decompresses me for some reason. But, you know, the other thing is just really just disappearing. I like the joke, like I just want to disappear, lay on a beach with a phone, right? With the phone, not doing emails, but like just browsing the internet, reading things like that's just relaxing to me where kind of, you know, ignore work for a day and just relax a little bit. So
nice.
Maybe that's my answer. I don't know. I'm a little quirky.
Yeah, that's all right. All good. And what's Ferris, what's maybe the one person that's had the biggest impact on your life as an entrepreneur that's maybe been a mentor to you and why did they have such a big impact?
You know, my answer is going to be an answer you're going to like. It's going to be podcasts, right?
Okay.
And what I mean by that is, you know, I mean, it's amazing all the things you can learn, right? I remember getting in a podcast, 10 plus 12 years ago, right? And they were first coming out. And, you know, at the time, there wasn't the variety of things. But if it wasn't for podcasts, I probably wouldn't be here where I am now, right?
Right.
You know, I used to read a lot of books and all of that. But, I mean, podcasts and hearing people's stories, the good, the bad, the ugly, right? It helps you kind of know the reality of that thing. And so, to me, it's not really one person, right? But, I mean, whenever I was getting into this, I powered through. I remember, you know, BiggerPox was the first one. I listened to, like, the first 100 episodes in the first 20 days. Just
nice.
I remember I was going to the gym and then, you know, just every day. Boom, boom, boom. You get inspired. You start to learn a whole industry.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I think it's just amazing to me just what you can learn from podcasts. So, you know, my wife, it drives her nuts, or I'm the kind of guy like go road trip and put on some podcasts and kind of go through. But yeah.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Ferris, listen, I'm sure our audience is going to want to connect with you, learn more about you, learn more about your portfolio, maybe even use your services or partner with you on a deal. What's the best place that they can connect with you?
Yeah, so disruptequity.com, D-I-S-R-U-P-T, equity.com. And my email is Ferris, F-E-R-A-S, at disruptequity.com. I'm on Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn. Again, I'm a tech guy. You can find me anywhere. So feel free to reach out to me, however people like.
Awesome. Ferris, thanks so much for joining us today on Accelerated Real Estate Investor. Appreciate having you on.
I'm glad to be here. That was fun. Thank you, Josh.
So there you have it, guys. Listen, I really enjoyed that interview with Ferris and specifically talking, kind of having a candid conversation, frankly, about being vertically integrated and some of the risks, the upside and the downside of working with third-party property management, and why Ferrest has decided to create his own property management company, even though, as he said, it's a complete pain in the butt, but it's a must-have, must-do in the apartment space. If you enjoyed the interview, make sure you like it, make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave us a 5-star rating and review. And also don't forget to visit Ferris's website, disruptequity.com. If you're listening to this interview and you're thinking to yourself, geez, I've really got to get into the apartment space. I really got to get some mentoring. I would love to be able to partner up with Josh. We have a special program. We call it Forever Passive Income. And Forever Passive Income is the ultimate combination of coaching, mastermind, and partnering, where I coach, mastermind, and partner with my student partners. You can apply to be a member of that group, Forever Passive Income. You can go to joshcantwellcoaching.com. There you can fill out the application. We'll get on the phone with you, see if you're a fit for that program. If you are, we'll offer you a spot. Again, it's a paid program. Not super duper expensive, but it's definitely worth the investment. I promise you, you'll get many times over if you jump into that program. So visit joshcantwellcoaching.com for more information on that. And don't forget to subscribe to the Accelerated Investor Podcast so you never miss another episode like this one with Ferris Musa. We'll see you next time, guys. Take care.
Hey, Josh here. And do you want to win a free Accelerated Investor t-shirt? All you have to do is give Accelerated Investor, our podcast, Accelerated Investor, a rating and a review on iTunes, okay? Do that now. Then send us a screenshot on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. What we're gonna do then is every week we're gonna pick our favorite rating and review, and we're gonna send that person a free t-shirt and maybe, again, some other cool, fun stuff as well from Accelerated Investors. So, again, don't forget to take a screenshot. Leave a rating, review, take a screenshot, send it to us so we know exactly who you are. And then once a week, every week on the podcast, we will announce a new winner. Don't forget to take a screenshot and send it to us so we know exactly who you are. We'll announce a new winner every week.
You were just listening to the Accelerated Investor Podcast with Josh Cantwell. If you enjoyed this episode and learned something new, help us build the AI community by leaving a review and 5-star rating on our iTunes podcast channel. Also, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss another episode. To see passive investing opportunities, visit freelandventures.com/passive. To start your journey toward the lifestyle you've always dreamed of with multifamily apartments, apply for one-on-one coaching with Josh at www.joshcantwellcoaching.com.